This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
It's now time for Activate, a show brought to you by Amnesty International.
Thank you for joining us this evening for our monthly Activate radio show, and it's also available as a podcast. So if you are catching up after our airing time on a Monday evening, then welcome to you too. Here tonight, this is Kerry. I'm here tonight with Stefan. Hi, Stefan.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Kerry. Glad to have you joining us tonight. And thanks for supporting Activate here on Plains FM and Amnesty International. I think we've got a good show lined up tonight, don't we, Kerry?
Yeah, we do. It's World Refugee Day next week. Later this week on Thursday, 20th of June. So we'll be talking about some issues around the refugee crisis around the world. We'll also hear from Greg, who's going to give us some good news, and also from Catherine, who's going to be dialing in with some human rights updates from around the world.
Great.
Hi everyone, this is Greg here from the Activate team. I'm just here to share some good news stories with you in, on a human rights theme. A story from that came in on May, some good news particularly for our regional team as we had been writing letters and supporting this prisoner of conscience in Thailand. His name is Jataput Boon Patarakasa, who was also better known as Pai or Pai Daldin. He was released in May this year, so just last month, after receiving a royal pardon shortly before finishing off a 2.5-year prison term. He'd been arrested in 2016 because he shared an online profile from BBC Thailand about the new king, soon after the king ascended the throne. So his release was actually part of a royal pardon for tens of thousands of prisoners to celebrate the new king's coronation, which also took place in May. He left prison early on Friday morning on the 9th of May and was reunited with his family. He said to the reporters outside, "I've been jailed for so long that I'd forgotten what freedom was like." He was one of dozens of prisoners freed. As we said, he was promised to abide by the country's laws but said he would also continue advocating for human rights. He declared his love for freedom and democracy, and he told fellow activists to fight with love rather than revenge. He was an opponent of the military-backed government who has taken part in numerous protests, and he was the only person to be prosecuted over the use of the article. He initially contested the charges but decided to, in the end, to plead guilty, because pleading guilty in these types of cases where you've been accused of offending the monarchy actually can significantly reduce sentences in Thailand. The United Nations has repeatedly called on Thailand to amend the law. The government says it's necessary to protect the monarchy, which is widely revered across the country. So that's very good news that Pai has been released. And just briefly, the second story is more recently, on the 12th of June, in Russia, the independent investigative journalist Ivan Golunov has been released from police custody following a massive outcry. He works for an independent news site called Medusa and has published material that has been critical of the Russian authorities. He had some drug charges which were laid against him. However, there were some questions about the veracity of those charges and the evidence against him. So he has been released after pressure internally from inside the country, from musicians, TV celebrities, cultural figures in the country. And this is quite an interesting case. Amnesty International was not directly involved in this case, but we do take an interest in it. And it has been a surprising outcome in many ways because internal pressure hasn't necessarily worked in the past, but in this case, he has been released. So that's a story to keep watching because there are going to be further protests about the way that that case was handled in Russia. Yes.
So this week, it's World Refugee Day, and that's on Thursday, the 20th of June, every year since 2000, I believe. It's been kind of celebrated and shared and commemorated the situation that's happening around the world. It's kind of an awareness-raising opportunity to really talk about some of the good things and, you know, raise awareness of some of the problems that are sort of continually evolving and changing the refugee situation around the world. This year, obviously, there is a lot happening. There's a lot of issues with the refugee crisis in Syria and Afghanistan, Sudan, being sort of some of the main countries, but you know, there are other areas that maybe don't get talked about so much, such as influx of people from Myanmar into Bangladesh, and you know, there are refugees all around the world who've been displaced from various parts of the world for various reasons, and this is just an opportunity for us to kind of talk about some of those issues and really get a sense of the scale of the problem. It's, you know, this show is about 25 minutes, half an hour, but every minute 20 people leave everything behind to escape war or persecution or terror. So that's, you know, within my maths isn't so good, but that's a lot of people during the time we're on the air, let alone the evening that you're in or the whole day. You know, it just adds up and up and up. And there are over 25 million refugees in the world right now. And of these, over a million of those people all over the world are in imminent need of resettlement. They're trying to find somewhere to be safe because of health reasons. They're at risk of violence. They're under threat of imminent persecution. So for those million or so people, as well as the 25 million of which they're a part, life is very scary, very uncertain. The future really could go in so many different directions. And so Stefan and I are here just sort of give you a bit of information about what's going on around the world and a few more stats, and just talk about some of maybe the misconceptions that there are around the refugee situation around the world. Stefan, so one of the key things I always find being from Europe is that a lot of people talk about it as a migrant crisis, and that came up in politics sort of a few years ago. But actually, it's not a migrant crisis, and refugees are very much not to be mixed up with the migrant.
Absolutely, right. Yeah, that's right. In many parts of all over the world, it's certainly not it's a crisis in the sense, as you pointed out, Kerry, 20 people per minute leaving. But that sort of political whipping horse, if you like, of migrants taking our jobs, and the lines get blurred, and understandably so, by, you know, the lay people such as me and you and everyone else listening. And it can be very easy to fall into the trap of or migrant equals refugee and refugee equals migrant. And I think it really helps to delineate what a migrant is, what a refugee is. So a migrant is a bit of a vast beast, isn't it, really? I mean, it encompasses, and jump in and correct me if I'm wrong here, but my understanding is anybody really who comes to New Zealand, whether it be as a refugee, as an asylum seeker, as someone who's gone through all the channels. They've got visas. They might have come here for jobs. Not always. They might have come here as a sponsored family member. So a migrant is literally someone who migrates to New Zealand under whatever circumstances. And by far the large number of people would be going through, if for want of a better word, the legal or the proper channels. And I say for want of a better word because, of course, claiming a refugee status is a legal option for people. But that's the bottom line, though. People who come here to study, to work, to be with spouses, to be with family members, and that's what we would, well, certainly I would think of as a migrant. Mm-hmm. Migrants can be refugees, and I think New Zealand now takes 1,000 refugees a year. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It was 750, and that was up to 1,000 last year. And actually, Amnesty International were campaigning quite heavily to double the quota from that 750 figure. And now that has risen up to 1,500, and that will be implemented by next year. So yes, it is currently 1,000. It'll be 1,500 by 2020.
Okay. So 1,000 a year this year, 750 historically, 1,500 from next year. It's a very small drop in the ocean. I must confess, I don't know the total number of migrants that come to New Zealand each year. I mean, if it were the Department of Labour or Internal Affairs, that would be able to let us know. But if you look at that number, it's 1,000 people coming as refugees. So it's a bit unfair to say, you know, there's a migrant crisis when, you know, talking about refugees, because we take a very small number in New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that refugee is a very precise definition around it, and that was outlined by the 1951 United Nations Refugee Convention and its 1967 protocol. So that, I've written that definition out because it helps to know that a refugee is defined as a person who has fled his or her home country because of, quote, a well-founded fear of persecution because of race, religion, nationality, membership of a social group or a political opinion, unquote. So that's a refugee, someone who genuinely fears for their life or their well-being or that of their families because of those reasons.
Absolutely. And the conversations that have been happening around the world that mix those two terms up, they just couldn't be more further removed, I think, from my comprehension of what it would be like to be a refugee. As someone who is myself a migrant from the UK, it's just so different to my experience. So obviously, you know, being a refugee is something very different to what is usually thought of as a migrant.
Absolutely. And I think certainly down here in New Zealand / Australasia, the waters get muddied even further because the term we hear bandied around is an asylum seeker. And again, that's another kettle of fish. Technically, I guess they fall under the category of migrants if they're in the country. And if you're like me, you'd have to look up and go, well, what's the difference between a refugee and an asylum seeker? An asylum seeker is a person who fits all those criteria that I described before, someone who has a well-founded or claimed to have a well-founded fear of persecution. But the key difference is that the country that they're in doesn't recognise what they have fled from. So, you know, if we're going to be very specific, I guess in Australia and their labelling of asylum seekers and the boat people coming from Indonesia who are predominantly Middle Eastern, I believe, Australia says, no, we don't recognise these people as refugees, therefore they're asylum seekers.
Yeah. And then there is a process by which you can apply for refuge as an asylum seeker, apply for asylum and then potentially be granted the status of refugee. But that can take time. And as you mentioned, Australia, obviously, there are people who've been in offshore detention centres for years and the conditions are quite appalling. So that is maybe not an immediate process. So being an asylum seeker can be quite drawn out.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the country in question might deny a person's application for refugee status and they may well be sent back to their country of origin, in fact, for political or reasons that are justified or not. So that can often be quite a traumatic and harrowing experience for, you know, genuine refugees who unfortunately don't have that title of refugee. I mean, sometimes there are happy outcomes. I think I just saw a headline the other day, and you might be able to flesh this out a bit, Kerry, but a young chap who was on, was it Nauris Island?
Yes, he was. I know the guy you mean, actually. I do have a couple of notes here. He was on Manus Island, just offshore from Australia. One of those, we talked about this quite a lot on this show, but one of the offshore detention centres that's quite controversial. His name was Abdul Aziz Mohammed, and he was originally from Sudan. And he was, you mentioned, they're not, like, quite often they come from the Middle East or from Africa, but they're actually coming from maybe Indonesia. It's not, their journey has already been quite hard by the time they get to these offshore detention centres. That's quite a long journey that he'd already had to take. But because of his human rights work, he actually won an award in Switzerland, and he was granted a temporary visa to go there to receive his award in Geneva. And they then granted him asylum in Switzerland. So he's going to be moving there. He may actually have already moved. But that news just came out in the last week, and that's a really positive story. Obviously, there are still very many people being held in those Australian offshore detention centres. But this is a really positive outcome where his activism as a human rights campaigner really sort of brought him to the attention, I suppose, of the Swiss authorities. So,
Well, that's a real happy ending story. Not a common happy ending story, but it's good to have those little beacons of light and hope in there. So where are the flashpoints for refugees? You mentioned a couple at the moment. You said, what did you say? You mentioned one that often doesn't make it to the headlines, but well, it has in the past, but the Rohingya people from Myanmar fleeing into Burma, and the sounds like well-founded accusations of genocide by the Myanmar government and military.
Yeah, and Bangladesh has taken, I think, over 900,000 refugees from Myanmar in... Well, it's quite a recent crisis. The conversation around Syria, places like Afghanistan, those have been going on for some years, but perhaps it's been going on for a long time, but certainly hit prominence in recent years anyway in Myanmar. There are other places that take quite a lot of refugees. Like that number, 900,000, is a huge number when you think we're talking 1,000 people here. And New Zealand isn't necessarily the biggest country in the world, but that's quite a different number. I know that Turkey has 3.5 million people. Lebanon has over a million. I believe Sudan has nearly a million from South Sudan. So some quite big numbers around the world. Germany and Sweden in Europe actually both have, I think Germany has nearly a million refugees, and Sweden has quite a high proportion compared to their population. So actually, as the two countries, maybe a bit more geographically distant from what's happening, but actually have really stepped up to the plate. So quite diverse stories from around the world. But it is 85% of developing nations, countries maybe adjacent to war and conflict, that's tend to end up receiving quite a lot of these.
Yeah. The one that often doesn't get a lot of press as well is the plight of the Palestinian refugees as well in Jordan and Lebanon. Lebanon per capita, I think, for a long time, don't know what it is recently, but I think it was 183 out of every 1,000 residents of Lebanon was a refugee, and most of them were Palestinian. Nowadays, with the conflict in Syria, vast millions of people would have been displaced from Syria. That might have changed the balance, but certainly Jordan and Lebanon, huge numbers of Palestinian refugees.
Yeah. It's, I think you're right about Lebanon. I saw they are, I think, around the world, ridiculously, disproportionately by far, the highest per capita refugee concentration. So it's
So where can our avid listeners find out some more information about refugees, Kerry, and how they can get involved maybe?
The United Nations, let me get this right, High Commission for Refugees, that's the UNHCR. They've got a website. They will have more information about what's going on around World Refugee Day. There's... you can find information through the United Nations. Amnesty International's website has some more information for kind of more local issues, Amnesty International in New Zealand, that is. And you can find out what we're doing to push for a more equitable solution to the refugee crisis around the world, to really encourage developed countries to step in and find a fair solution that really addresses the issues around the crisis around the world, rather than relying on developing countries to kind of pick up so much of the issue and the problem.
Great. So, as Kerry said, check out amnesty.org.nz for information, any particular actions or campaigns we're taking, and our Facebook page. We always post for good news stories there and any updates or actions you can take, and come along to our letter writing nights and meetings.
Yeah.
Oh, Hello and welcome to another round of Human Rights in the News for the month of June. An item that caught my eye in the news this week were the Hong Kong protests. I wanted to find out more, so reached for The Guardian. As per normal, they have summarised what's been going on there in a nice, neat little package, which I will pass on to you now. So what are the Hong Kong protests about? Hundreds of thousands of people demonstrated at the weekend against legal changes that would make it easier to extradite people to China from the semi-autonomous city. This is what the amended extradition law would do and why it is so controversial. What is the proposed extradition law? Hong Kong's amended extradition law would allow the extradition of suspects to mainland China for the first time. Supporters say the amendments are key to ensuring the city does not become a criminal refuge, but critics worry Beijing will use the law to extradite political opponents and others to China where their legal protections cannot be guaranteed. Hong Kongers are angry about the bill because they fear that the proposed extradition law will be used by authorities to target political enemies. They worry the new legislation spells the end of the one country, two systems policy, eroding the civil rights enjoyed by Hong Kong residents since the handover of sovereignty from the UK to China in 1997. Many attending the protests on Sunday said they could not trust China, as it had often used non-political crimes to target government critics, and said they also feared Hong Kong officials would not be able to reject Beijing's requests. Legal professionals have also expressed concern over the rights of those sent across the border to be tried. The conviction rate in Chinese courts is as high as 99%. Arbitrary detentions, torture, and denial of legal representation of one's choosing are also common. So how much is Beijing pushing for this new law? Hong Kong officials have repeatedly said the bill has not come from the central government in Beijing. However, Beijing has voiced its backing for the changes. China's foreign ministry said in a statement earlier last week that it firmly supports the Hong Kong government in passing the law. What are the wider fears about Beijing's influence on Hong Kong? Many in the protests so far said they felt overwhelmed by a sense of helplessness in the face of mainland China's increasing political, economic, and cultural influence in Hong Kong. Hong Kong's top political leader is not elected by ordinary votes, but by a 1,200-strong election committee accountable to Beijing. Many Hong Kongers also cited the jailing of leaders and activists from the 2014 Occupy Central movement, as well as the disqualification of young localist lawmakers as signs of the erosion of civil freedoms. What happens next? The chief executive of Hong Kong, Carrie Lam, has said that she is determined to pass the extradition bill. She promised to further improve it, but members of the public appear unconvinced. So as we see that there has been more demonstrations this week and the police have been out in force against those demonstrators, we will watch this space. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening, or if you're tuning in via the podcast function on your phone or your device, your computer, whatever it may be, then thank you for checking us out. Obviously, tonight's been quite a heavy show on a big issue like the refugee crisis around the world, but hopefully it's been informative and interesting. And you know, if you've got any questions, then you can reach us through our Facebook page, Amnesty International and Christchurch, I believe, the page. Yep. And you could also join us at our regular bi-monthly meetings or our letter writing event. Stefan, you coordinate that, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. So we had a great letter writing last week on Thursday in June, and our next letter writing is going to be on Wednesday the 17th of July, an hour and a half long. You can come for some, any, or all of that. We provide all the information. If you've never written a letter before or don't know what to write, rest assured we've got all that support material there, but we'd love to see it. It's a very relaxed and friendly, supportive atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a good time, and really powerful way to take sort of effective affirmative action. Kind of, it just feels very satisfying, doesn't it?
It does.
Next month we'll be back as usual. I'm going to talk about a really interesting documentary that's coming out very soon. It's due out in July, and I listened to a podcast about it about a week or so ago and was just really impressed. It's about a couple who were living in Aleppo, and I'll tell you more about them in next month's show. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for listening.
I want you to get together.